Robert Half research indicates 9 out of 10 hiring managers are having difficulty hiring. If you have open roles, chances are you're feeling this too. That's why you need Robert Half. Our specialized recruiting professionals engage with our proprietary AI to connect businesses of all sizes with highly skilled talent in finance and accounting, technology, marketing and creative, legal, and administrative and customer support. At Robert Half, we know talent. Visit roberthalf.com today.
Paramount Plus and the National Park Foundation present A Mountain of Zen. This Earth Week, you can live stream 7 national parks for 7 days on Paramount Plus. Paramount Plus, official streaming partner of the National Park Foundation.
Welcome back to the Cover 3 Podcast with your hosts, Chip Patterson, Tom Fornelli, Danny Cannell, and Bud Elliott. It's your call for the best college football coverage, from National Signing Day to the National Championship and everything in between. CBS Sports presents the Cover 3 Podcast.
And welcome back to the Cover 3 Podcast here on CBS Sports. That's Bud Elliott. That's Danny Cannell. That's Bill Connolly, ESPN. Jumping back in for what's becoming a fairly, you know, regular, almost annual part of the Cover 3 Podcast family as well. Lots to get to because over at ESPN.com, you can find that Bill Connolly has dropped the new returning production numbers. He has dropped the first batch of official, get your arms around it, SP Plus ratings. We will get into that as well. But Bill, before we jump into some of the news of the day, and I'm excited that you're here for this news. I know you were recently in Europe. I know you're crunching all your numbers right now. Welcome back, man. How you doing? How's your 2024 been so far?
I got to go to Europe, catch some soccer, you know, do some things that most of my Twitter followers don't really enjoy all that much. And they just kind of put up with, which I appreciate. And now I'm back. It is like SP Plus dropped this week or last week or whatever. It's a very
it was Valentine's
funny
Day. I was not speaking to my wife. I was breaking down SP Plus, the changes from the end of last year's ranking to the beginning of this year's ranking. It's the most romantic thing you can do. Hey, honey, you see where Iowa State's going? You see what the Cyclones are doing right now? I mean, that's an aphrodisiac right there.
Sure. And it was weird, though, that I didn't immediately follow that up with, you know, a Mac preview. We're doing the previews a little different this year. Last year, I learned my lesson. As much as I love diving right in, I got a little trauma from the AAC preview I wrote last year that was dramatically outdated like 2 days later. There's just absolutely no point in doing any preview write-in until that April window closes, and then we'll dive into regularly scheduled programming after that.
Love it. All right. So yesterday we talked about it a lot on Monday's show and a little bit last week as well. The College Football Playoff Board of Managers officially approves a change to the 5+7 format for the 2024 and 2025 season. So we will have a 12-team playoff. 5 highest-ranked conference champions get in, 7 at-large bids. The top 4 of those 5 are going to get byes. The 5th one is guaranteed nothing except for a spot in the playoff. So we can call it the race for the 12 seed. I don't know. That's just judging by the way that things have looked before. Danny, I want to let you jump in on this first. Did you have, because we didn't get to hear from you on Monday, you were repping, you're KC, but not for the Chiefs. But for that travel volleyball, right?
Yeah, Tribe.
Let's go.
Tribe.
You guys win?
That's their club name, Tribe. They did not win. Highly, highly competitive tournament. Over 200 coaches were there. Division I coaches were watching, scouting the tournament. So yeah, the girls were definitely nervous playing in front of them. But it's good to be back home and to weigh in on the 5+7 model, which, duh, we all have talked about. It's the most obvious solution to a problem that we've had. I think it was the easy fix, and I think it is the least surprising thing of all that I'm already seeing SEC and Big Ten fans complain and administrators and higher-ups complain, saying, hold on a second, you're telling me that the Big 12 or ACC champ is guaranteed a bye? Like, are we sure that's going to happen? So this is a very short-term fix that I would expect is going to be look once again drastically different in just 2 years.
We know all of this was happening.
Yeah, like, every bit of it.
I put out, this reminds me of on The Simpsons. Remember when Springfield was switching its area codes? and Homer is somehow caught off guard, and Lenny's like, but Homer, like, we went to area code camp. What about the leaflets they dropped from the sky and the weekly phone calls and Marge riding it on your arm? And like, all of a sudden, it's like, totally caught off guard. Like, guys, we've been putting out graphics with the Cover 3 logo for the projected 12-team playoff if it was this year with these exact rules in place. Notre Dame can't make that. They can't get the home playoff game.
There were not a conference champion. So many articles about this 2 years ago.
God, like, I feel like I'm such a bad podcast host now because we did not explain this very well. Like, I thought we did, but are people just playing dumb because they want to get their takes off? Because, guys, we've known about this for over a year.
What do you think, Bill?
I mean, he just said it. Like, it's, we all talked about it, that we wrote about it. Nobody reads, I think, is what we learn, which makes me feel really good. But no, I mean, this, there were no surprises here. This was all, anytime anybody did a playoff simulation in the last 2 years, it involved these exact things. Jack Swarbrick was asked about it because he was on the committee that created
the 12-team model. He was on the super secret committee.
He said many times, like, fine, we'll take the 5 seed if we're unbeaten, and that'll be our conference title game, and then we'll move on. And like, it's weird, and it's always been a weird arrangement with Notre Dame, but none of this was a surprise, and it really was strange. I assume that it is just something that, you know, sometimes I read something about, I don't really grasp it until I really need to, which drives my wife crazy if it's like, you know, a change in our billing or the city of Columbia or whatever. And, you know, it just kind of flies right by me. But, you know, this was something that we've all talked about, and I don't understand how people are surprised.
Yeah, I don't know if Michael is here, but if I'm going to be a real hater, I mean, are we really talking about Notre Dame being a top 4 team? I mean, come on. I mean, is it Notre Dame? Don't they just, their current state right now, high floor, right? But I mean, they just got 8 seed written all over them. You know, you're probably going to get in there with like a 9-10 win season. You win enough of the big games, then yeah, you're probably going to be there. So I don't know how many times it was like this 12-0 Notre Dame team is going to get screwed, because I don't know how many times we're going to see a 12-0 Notre Dame team in the next 2 years.
Eight seed gets to host playoff game.
Yeah.
So there is that.
It's a solid place to be.
Do we think that they sort of in exchange for some of the changes that they're wanting to go away from the 6-6 to the 5-7, do we think they agreed to keep one of the G5 teams in, and they're like, look, we'll keep you in. Let's just, nobody really wants to get sued on antitrust grounds, right? And I'm not really sure that the G5s have a great case for antitrust, but you don't really want to have to defend that, right? So maybe just keep it in. It's only one, if they lose, it's only one game per year type thing. I saw some people on Twitter like, why would they agree to this at all? Like, why are they letting the G5 in? First of all, I think it's the right thing to do, but I don't know. Maybe just from a business perspective, they like, yeah, it's really not that big of an ask.
It's incredible to me how much this argument has shifted in these last couple of years, though, because yeah. I've been doing a lot of research on old conference realignment stuff, old playoff argument stuff for, you know, redacted reasons that I won't, that I can hopefully share in a future appearance. But like the entire BCS movement, a humongous part of it, the reason so many people were dissatisfied with the BCS was the Utahs and the TCUs and the Boise States especially kind of getting screwed by the whole deal and being better than what they were kind of given as status within the BCS bowls and whatnot. That was a humongous, you know, Orrin Hatch, you know, complaining on behalf of Utah and all this stuff. And so much of that, and this is my territory. This is, you know, hooray underdog, hooray representation, all that stuff. This was such a big part of all of our arguing in like 2008, 2010. And now it's like, but should the SEC have 4 automatic bids to this 12-team playoff and forget the G5? Like, it's blows my mind. And I do not like it. And I do not like this universe that we seem to be moving toward.
Do we think Sankey is sincere in this quote unquote, I want 4 automatic qualifiers thing? Or is it just, okay, yeah.
I assume it's a political anchor thing. You know, throw it way out here so that you get more of what you want elsewhere. But there's no reason for anybody to agree to it. The only card they have left is, well, we'll just start our own playoff and whatnot, and maybe the Super League thing happens. But if it's going to happen, you can't stop it. So fight for yourself in the meantime, I would say, with all the other commissioners.
Bill, you've done a really good job analyzing the playoff race during the season. I enjoy, you know, going back and creating the resume SP plus, you know, trying to reverse engineer old BCS ratings to see what those would be like. I mean, just lots of different ways to look at and what's incredibly an inexact science of trying to, you know, decide how these teams are going to rank against each other, and especially with the committee being as unpredictable as they are. Bud has alleged, and I maybe agree to some of this, that a lot of the non-top four spots are just justifying whatever they want to do at the top four, or especially the end of the ratings are just justifying what they're doing at the top. I don't know if that is sustainable now that more rankings matter. Now that we have these at-large bids, it can't just be reverse engineering the top four. We've got real significance to what's happening between who's number nine and who's number 12. When we're going to get to SP Plus in a little bit, the rating of a nine and a 12 might be very, very different. And that can be the difference in your playoff inclusion. I know you even went through and did like a quad system, right? At one point during this year, you know, sort of be like, okay, how'd you do against, you know, top 30, top 50? Like, do you think that in the expanded playoff era, college football needs some kind of bigger than top 25 rating, some kind of net rating, or some way to judge a team that beats the 27th best team as valuable, you know, as opposed to it having to be in the top 25?
Yeah, it is. It is kind of funny because I have a piece scheduled for March at some point. Like, how should we be ranking these teams? And I don't know the answer to that. I have like a month to figure that out because It's been such a frustrating process over the last 25 years, how they created a system. They went out of their ways because the polls were so malleable and political and everything. And nobody liked that if, you know, you lose in week two, it doesn't matter as much as if you lose in week 12 and all that stuff. And they created this BCS formula that incorporated polls and computers and tried to get at a more objective approach. And every time they disliked the results, they changed the system to fit what the humans preferred, to the point where they weren't even allowing computer ratings to factor in margin of victory, which is kind of the whole point of computer ratings, is factoring in like how, you know, a 1-point win is not a 28-point win. And so they neutered the system, and then they made a big deal when they came up with the CFP that we're not going to have a formula. We're just going to have the smartest people in college football determining all this. And in the very first year, TCU wins the game in the final week of the season and drops from third to sixth, because, you know, conference title bump and all these other factors that go into everything. Like, it's just, there's not a good system. There's not a great system anyway, but just, I don't know what the best one is at this point. It was funny. Like, a couple of years ago, I was frustrated with the ranking sometime in 2022. So I did come up with let's create a BCS style formula. And I used SP Plus and FPI and then resume SP Plus and strength of record, kind of a best and most deserving thing. And I combined that with the polls, and I basically got the CFP rankings, like in a given right in a given week. Like, that formula basically matched up with about 23 of the 25. But that, at the very least, that made it interesting to see which teams the committee did seem to be making a compromise on, and it, like, where they kind of defied their typical logic and changed their mind. I'll give you one guess what the only disagreement between the formula and the committee was in the top 10 or 15 this last year. Something that we may have talked about a few times, something that a couple of Florida State grads on this podcast might have a pretty good guess on. But it is like, we can get most of the way to what we have with a formula if we wanted to do a formula thing. I did like what Reese Davis said when we were talking about this on the game day pod in December. He's like, if they were to go back to a formula, you have to basically say, we are not changing this for the next 10 years. Like, this is just it. You have to live with it. Here's what they would have produced in previous years if we did it this way. This is going to be it. And we're not changing it. They're never going to do that. So I don't know what the best answer is.
Do you ever think we could come up with a system that somehow, I think almost every other sport does, where we don't have to have a committee, a formula, or anything? We just have a play-in playoff. Like, it is determined by the results on the field. Think there's a chance that could happen, or is there too much political power that's like, yeah, it's a resume? Like you said, the smart, you know, I know you were being facetious, but the greatest minds of college football get together in this room, half of whom never played or coached football, and we're supposed to trust them when all they're doing is referencing the formulas that you mentioned and, you know, spitting them back out. But do you ever think there's could be a system that where we eliminate that?
Well, no, the short answer is no. Like there's never going to be, the only way you would do that is if you had 12 auto bids, for a 12 team playoff. And I mean, I'm all for giving, you know, the nine conference champions of FBS and then the top and three conference champions in FCS. We wanted to make it that like we could, but that's not going to happen. And so at some point you, and even then you would have to figure out how to rank them.
Right.
So like there's no way to get away from some sort of ranking system, some sort of subjective analysis. And they do that at every level of the other sports within NCAA. So, I mean, I guess it's never really that much of a departure, but it is it's hard. And there are enough power brokers. There's enough political pull here from a lot of different places that. I don't know what the best realistic answer is for this, yeah, especially since, you know, talking about coaches and knowledgeable people and ADs, like that first, you know, that first playoff committee with Tom Osborne and all these, like they got as much gravitas as they possibly could, but none of those, Tom Osborne doesn't know how to rank teams. Like that's, he knows how to coach football really, really, really well. And that's not the same thing as picking resumes or best or most deserving or whatever. And so even then it was kind of a flawed idea because just because you know, this doesn't mean you know this thing either. And it's, I don't know, it's never been, I've never loved the committee.
Fisherman in the chat who's watching in the Cover Three tailgates watching us, youtube.com/cover3. It's crazy how college basketball accepts KenPom, but CFB hates SB plus FPI at Ketera. Yeah, KenPom is on the selection committee team sheet. Strength and record is on the selection committee team sheet. KPI, like all of these numbers. I mean, Bill, is that just a sample size thing where when you have 30 games, then you do feel like those numbers have more value, and when you only have 12 games, like one, you know, bananas result could skew those numbers so much that you're hesitant to jump into it?
I mean, I guess, but to me that means you need computer records more with football because the records can be more misleading. And so I can make pretty much exactly that is the one thing I'll always be proud of myself, because I got hired by ESPN in 2019. That fall I did the whole, you know, go to Dallas, sit in the committee room, go through the process, et cetera thing. And I was proud of myself for sticking up for like the way I view things in that room. Cause I mean, you know, Bill Hancock and others were proud of the fact that they don't use computer ratings. We don't need computer rankings. We have the mind power of this room. And I was proud of myself for basically saying that's kind of silly. And you're leaving off helpful criteria by not looking at it. And the other thing is they don't use advanced stats. They still use stats that aren't as good. That's the other part of it, is we all use stats for however we're evaluating teams. We're using stats to do that. It's just you could use better stats that tell you more and more accurate things than like what's your record and you know what was some of the other stuff, like kind of like your yardage versus the average that your opponent
relatives is like total yards, relative yards, total rushing, relative rushing. And what I saw looking at a team sheet is that they just overload you. They throw you too many numbers, and then you're just like, I don't even know what to make of this. I'm just going to look at their loss column and then just sort them out however I see it.
And the other thing I do remember about that was, you know, you can compare teams. You can pick team A versus team B, and when you put them on this computer screen at the same time, there's a bunch of green dots for like team A is superior here, here, and here. Team B is superior here, here, and here. And you basically just look at you count the green dots and say, well, team A must be better. That was like a very instinctive thing to do. Once you see that, I mean, I'm big on conditional formatting. Anybody who follows me on Twitter sees me like posting a bunch of red and green stuff. So I know that process really well, but that's what a lot of people in the room seem to be doing too, is you can A, B, and C, who has the most green dots? A must win this battle then. So A gets my vote. And that's fine if the stats you're using are really, really useful and helpful, but like rushing yards per game or whatever was on that, some of the things on that sheet, it wasn't doing it for me.
Air Force to the college football.
That's right. I mean, I'm cool with, I want that. That's exactly the world I want to live in.
All right. One last thing before we hit a break and then start to dive into SP Plus, the ratings and sort of the outlook of the 2024 season in college football. I don't think we're getting smaller. Bill, do you think 12 fits or 16? How's either your preference or your outlook? You can take it either way you want.
Well, I'm for it. Like, I know, knowing how much the coach is really, those buys mean so much to coaches, especially. I think we underestimate, every coach I've ever talked to said, like, that's almost too much of an advantage. If I had control over all this, and I very obviously do not, why not just add the other four conference champions, and instead of giving those top four seeds a bye, just give them an easier game? That cuts that advantage down a little bit. It gives you full representation, gives you the same number of at-larges. That's not going to happen. But I do think the fact that whichever article I was reading yesterday talked about Petitti 1-16. Like, every time we get a new voice in the room, and these commissioner jobs seem to change constantly, except for the SEC, every time you get a new voice in the room, they're going to say, well, what about this? And you start running the calculations on what a 16-team playoff could make you, and I think we just kind of gravitate in that direction. We're not going to, you know, as much as we complain about bracket creep in basketball, we haven't really expanded the bracket in almost 40 years now. We're not going to get to like a 64 team football bracket by any means. I could easily see us getting to 16 though.
Mm. Which,
well, go ahead.
You could involve killing conference title games, I guess.
Yeah.
Like that. Possibly. If we start to see conference title games go back to, I mean, they've only existed for kind of a short period of time in the history of the sport. People are like, oh, there's, like the sanctity of college,
yes, football, integrity and tradition. Yeah, you know,
what, like the Big 12's conference title game has existed for how many years?
Right. After they got left out. So 14, like, they get left out because they don't have a conference title game, and they got the regular season at the end of the year. They created it within the next two seasons.
Yeah,
seven, that always cracked me up, by the way, since it cost them a number of BCS title shots. The title game did, and then they get left out once, and like, we got to bring it back. But I guess that was just a money thing at the end of the day too.
That to me is a step in the direction of getting rid of the committee, because the conference championship games are a problem right now. Like, what do you do after? What do you do with the loser? You have to slot them somewhere. If you include, or if you did away with them all together, I think that solves one of those problems. It's still on the back end to be an issue, but I think that's
especially with bloated conferences.
Right.
I mean, 18 teams, we're just going to pick two.
Right. Well, then, but I think you build in four, whatever it is. You know,
that was one of the more demoralizing things last fall, when we had a bunch of really exciting title races. And I started to realize, like, oh, almost everybody involved in these title races in the ACC and Big 12, or Big 12, especially, they're all going to be in the Big 10 or SEC next year. We're going to, like, four of the top 10 are going to be in conference title games next year. And that's not as fun.
Yeah, I was like, on one hand, I think on Tuesday, I was writing, I was like, hey, actually, you know, 5+7 could be better for the ACC and the Big 12, because when you look at historically over the course of the college football playoff, you know, schools like Florida State, schools like Utah, like, they would have been in there. They would have been able to get those at-large bids.
Yeah.
But at the same time, I also ran a simulation of my projections for 2024 on Wednesday, and I ain't have any extra. I gave all the extras to the Big Ten and the SEC. So it's just kind of the way.
Yeah, that's one of the, you know, looking at not just SP Plus rankings, but looking at projected wins right now. It's kind of funny. I expected, like, a lot of the debates moving forward to be like 9-3 SEC team versus 10-2 ACC team, that kind of thing. But looking at right now, actually Notre Dame has the highest projected win total at the moment, which is fun. But then even just looking at win totals, it's Big Ten, Big Ten, SEC, Big 10, SEC, 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 Big 10. So like, what that's telling me is, like, the Big 12 runner-up is going to be like 9-4 after the conference title game, and ACC maybe too. So this is not a good year for at-large bids outside of those two major conferences, I don't think. But we'll see. I mean, there are always surprises, I guess.
And fans are going to lose it when those teams jump ahead of all these at-large teams and get the 3-4 seed and a bye.
That's like the
race number three in the country. Like, Oregon or Texas is going to be number three in the country in the final rankings and drop to a 5 seed, while Clemson jumps from 13-3 and Utah jumps from like 15-4.
Screw everything. I'm fine with it.
Take the check.
Bring it on.
All right. Coming up on the other side, let's start to look at those SP Plus ratings. What does it tell us about some of the teams involved in college football in general, with ESPN's Bill Connolly?
Next.
The wait is over. The Chi returns with new episodes on Paramount Plus.
What brings you to the show?
Opportunity.
Everybody get down! Walk right up to
the sun. A new rain is coming to the South Side.
Never should have sent a boy to do a woman's job.
The Chi. New episodes May 10th. Visit ParamountPlus.com/The Chi to get a 50% discount off the Paramount Plus with Showtime annual plan. Offer ends July 14th. Subscription auto renews. Restrictions apply.
On May 23rd.
I want to go back to normal.
What's normal?
The Paramount Plus original series, Evil, returns.
We've already hunted werewolves and demons.
And now what? A baby antichrist?
Okie dokie.
Prepare yourself.
You will not beat us.
For the end.
I have visions of hell.
Make it stop. Make it shut up.
You're not gonna survive this.
Evil, the final season. Streaming May 23rd, only on Paramount Plus.
Back here on the Cover 3 podcast. Come on. Come on, y'all. You want to be a part of the Cover 3 tailgate? How do you be a part of the Cover 3 tailgate? Smash that subscribe. Like the video as well. We appreciate it in advance. We got a nice little subscriber barrier coming up. We got to come up. Danny, we got to come up with something fun to do.
Yeah. My wheel's been spinning on how we get to 50K and how do we do it fast.
I think we unveiled the Danny Cannell President's Day President's Power Rankings.
There you go.
It on Monday.
Subscriber show. Only. Subscriber only. Only show.
Yeah. Danny Cannell ranks the presidents. All right, but Bill, getting into the SP Plus ratings, you mentioned at the very top of the show your trauma from having to. You know, I in my head, I thought it might have been Zach Franklin, you know, or so I can't remember who it is. But it's like you go in, you start these conference previews, then all of a sudden you've got even more transfers right here. What is your current state of transfers and sort of how you continue to evolve, factoring them into your SP Plus ratings?
Well, I think what I found last year was, you know, the approach from last year wasn't too bad. I mainly say that because it pretty much nailed Colorado. Which was the test case of all test cases. It whiffed on like UNLV and some other pretty transfer heavy teams, Texas State, I guess. But basically the way I'm always going to do these projections is going to be based in some way around returning production, recent history, and recruiting rankings. The weighting of those has changed quite a bit. Recruiting rankings, the raw recruiting rankings don't carry as much weight as they did 3-4 years ago. Which I think makes sense since you're not as many guys you're playing come from those recruiting rankings. You're obviously bringing in, but transfer recruiting rankings are part of that now. And then just, you know, what I've always done historically is just kind of when you bring in a transfer, cram his production into the return and production formula. And I still basically do that. It's just, you know, that means a lot more now than it would have. You know, when the most transfers a team would take are like 6, you know, now the national average is whatever it is, 8, 9, something in that 7 to 9, probably. So it's just that part's different, but the approach last year, I didn't have to change too much after getting another year of data. And so it really is just, you know, the transfer recruiting rankings piece carries a lot more weight within the recruiting rankings. And then that transfer production matters too.
What do you do with coaching turnover? Because we've seen unprecedented coaching turnover, yeah. 3 out of 4 playoff teams, and some of those were surprises. What do you do with that?
I still think there's a way to incorporate, nothing is the short answer because I've never figured out a good way to adjust for that because it's zero sum. Some, you know, half the teams get better after losing their coach and half of them get worse. I've always thought that there was a way to kind of factor in like regressing to your historical mean. Like if you just lost the best coach you've ever had, Your program's probably in pretty good shape, but it's still probably going to drift to wherever it was before, at least some. I'd like to think there's something in there I could do where, you know, the fact that Alabama just lost the greatest coach of all time does matter. And even though they just brought in a guy who's been awesome at every single job he's ever had, it's still probably going to matter that you're coming down from the greatest coach of all time. And I don't have that in there. Everything I do is based on what makes the numbers more predictive. And I've just somehow never found a way to do that. So hopefully one of these years I figure that out.
With regards to, you know, recent history and historic patterns and whatnot, do you find yourself weighting that lesser now because of the roster turnover, or do we feel like there are maybe some you know, unspoken things that helped you be really good for a long time that probably are still there. Maybe just, you know, instead of Bagman, it's NIL, like just kind of, or, you know, administrative support and alignment, like things that maybe the system is picking up on that it's not explicitly picking up. Like, have you de-weighted recent, you know, like recent history due to roster turnover or not?
Yeah, it was never a massive part of the equation to begin with. Yeah, it's just basically, you know, years two years ago through 5 years ago had just a little bit of weight in the formula. It has a little bit less now, but it's still, it was never a humongous part. I do like it, though, just because it is kind of a I've always just called it a program health check. Like 1 year of success, you know, if two teams were exactly the same last year, one of them's been good for 10 years, one of them was just good last year, we kind of know which one's more likely to drop next year. And this is just kind of a way to get at that. And it's still in there, but yeah, it's not a heavy weight by any means.
Time for my annual call to throw out bowl game stats from SP Plus. Are we any closer to not including bowl game?
The problem is, no. The problem is,
some it's of like the, a 12-year thing for us.
Games obviously matter for obvious reasons, but then like the G5 games where both teams are actually trying. They've lost transfers. We saw that a lot this year too. But some of those G5 games were like real team against real team, and that mattered. It's like that game would help to move forward. So at this point, it would have to be me sitting there and going, okay, that one counts, that one counts, that one counts, that one doesn't. Florida State, Georgia obviously doesn't, et cetera, et cetera. Although I think it should count for Georgia. I think Georgia also lost a lot of players and used that as an opportunity to say, hey, we are still the best team in the country. But that's another story. It would have to be a very subjective thing, just me making those manual adjustments. And that's the thing I try to avoid the absolute most. So I think they're going to count. Now, I mean, it's one game and out of 13, so it only counts so much to begin with. We're not any closer to that on my end, at least.
Okay, let's open up an extra tab. We need to figure out another column for the fact that App State and Miami, Ohio both tried real hard, but it was a deluge, and so it was impossible to get too. Any yards at all. So can we factor in that as well?
That would have been in the yes or no, it doesn't count tab. Yes, that would count in the no, I'm not counting that game. It was fun. I mean, guys sliding around everywhere, but it certainly didn't tell us a lot about those two teams.
Oh, no, and the Chipolytics, just big plus points for Sean Clark and the Mountaineers right there. You know, the vibes are strong when you're able to grit out a win like that in the unseasonable weather.
No, and that's in there. Maybe that's why I have them projected first in the Sun Belt, was because of grit.
All right,
that's what made the difference there.
You just mentioned the Georgia Bulldogs, and they are peerless. They are peerless in SP Plus. I do like a general scan of everybody's way too earlys. They are consensus when it comes to the number one team in the country, but sort of expand that. How it could be you, SP Plus, but how do you see the tiers at the very, very top of the sport? Like how would you group these teams at the top in terms of like Georgia's at the top, but who's in that second tier and maybe where do you draw that next line?
Yeah. I was kind of curious. I very clearly assumed Georgia was going to be number one when I knocked this out, but I was curious. I thought Ohio State might end up a little closer to them in that top spot because their defense really was phenomenal last year. And as we're just talking about counting this bowl game or not counting this bowl game, Ohio State's offense, we could completely eliminate those numbers from the Cotton Bowl against Missouri. Their defense was awesome in that game. In a way that I think reflected what they were capable of last year and what they'll be capable of next year. But that defense is projected first overall. The offense is only projected 20th, though, and that's why they're second, but a distant second. It is pretty impressive. Like, they're 4.5 points behind Georgia, which is the same distance between Ohio State and, I think, number seven Penn State. Is that same 4.5 points? So if we're breaking these into tiers, yeah, Georgia's probably starting off by itself, but Ohio State, Oregon, Texas absolutely have to be kind of crammed into that second tier, I think. And then, you know, then there's Michigan and Alabama, which I think anybody with any knowledge of college football is going to have a completely different opinion of what to make of Michigan and Alabama for next year. But they're in kind of this 2A tier to me. And then we have a little bit of a drop to everybody else, the Penn States and Ole Misses and Florida States and maybe A&M, of course, Mizzou. maybe LSU, et cetera. It does feel like, you know, it's tier one, tier two, tier two A, and then everybody else.
Oregon, Texas ahead of Michigan, Bama, despite them going to new conferences where I'm sure we've all heard the narrative. Good luck. They're going to be 7-5, 8-4. Where do they go through our gauntlet? How does that impact your projections there? First year in a new, in the Super 2.
Well, the fact that that the Big Ten, even with the new teams, grades out closer to the Big 12 than the SEC, I'm not all that worried about Oregon. We can certainly get into mileage traveled and does that have a cumulative effect over time. But, Oregon's schedule right now, where do I have them? I have them as the 28th strength of schedule right now. That's certainly solid for a P5 team, but it's almost dead average for a P5 team. Or how we used to P5C. That's going to take a little while. That's not a thing anymore, and that's going to I have to get used to that. But they play what? They play the number two team, they play the number five team, and then the third hardest game is against the number 25 team. That's a manageable schedule, especially since 10-2 will pretty much always get you in to a playoff if you're from those top two conferences. Big Ten's very, very top heavy and very loaded with extremely mediocre teams. So they'll be fine overall.
I mean, you look at that, like four of the top seven are Big Ten.
Yeah.
And then the next one's USC at 23, Wisconsin 25, Iowa 26. Like that's a pretty serious drop off.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that's if you count from the bottom, you have number 90, 86, 79, 61, 55.
Like five subpar teams at the FBS level. Like, forget a power conference level. Right. Like, that's an interesting range for the bottom of the conference. One that makes schedule draw so important, and that makes me feel a little uncomfortable.
and it's kind of funny, even within the SEC, the difference in schedule strengths, even among just the top teams, is pretty wild. Florida and Oklahoma got absolutely screwed by the schedule makers for 2024. They're number one and number three in strength of schedule right now. Vanderbilt, poor Vanderbilt's number two. I guess that doesn't really matter.
Because Vanderbilt can't play Vanderbilt.
That's right. But then, let's see. Ole Miss currently scheduled strength number 25, Missouri 38. They could not have timed having an experienced and proven successful team with the easiest schedule they're ever going to get in the SEC. But that's still a humongous range in quality, just depending on how many. There are five of the top 10 teams are from the SEC right now, but not that many teams are playing more than like two of them. So Oklahoma definitely, OU fans complained for so long about, lack of great home games and whatnot. Because Texas never goes there, obviously. Well, they got the whole be careful what you wish for thing in 24, at least.
Coming up on the other side, we're going to get a little team specific. I know that we've got a couple of teams that we'd like to get Bill's thoughts on. We've got some comments from the Cover 3 tailgate. Go ahead, and if you've got those as well, go ahead and throw them in there right now as we continue to break down SP Plus for 2024. Next.
CBS Wednesday.
We have so many cool, diverse people from different backgrounds, different beliefs, different upbringings, and it just keeps growing.
I'm a citizen of the United States.
I'm a hustler.
I'm a big Taylor Swift fan.
I'm the queen of the tribe. I'm a
survivor. I am playing whatever role I gotta play.
I'm gonna play this game full speed.
I ain't going down like no punk.
A new Survivor, Wednesday on CBS and streaming on Paramount Plus.
You can now relive the best moments of the UEFA Champions League 24/7. The UEFA Champions League channel is a new 24-hour streaming channel serving non-stop goals, highlights, and full match replays from the world's most prestigious club competition. Reminisce on your favorite moments, legendary players, and brilliant goals with the UEFA Champions League channel streaming around the clock on Pluto TV and the CBS Sports app.
Back here on the Cover 3 podcast, thrilled for one of our regular visits from Bill Connolly of ESPN, longtime friend here in the college football space, former coworker and co-host, shout out podcasting and play nobody of our good friend Bud Elliott. So, Bill, Actually, Bud, you take dibs here. I know you had some teams that you were locked and loaded on. Where do you want to start to turn our attention?
I just think there's so much interesting stuff here. I'm going to start Ole Miss. So 10 points better from where they were pre-bowl, slightly less because they whipped up on Penn State pretty good in the bowl game. But that was, at least when I pulled it, the largest riser year over year in terms of raw rating. Do you feel like, I mean, you said you nailed the transfers with Colorado, and obviously I think the numbers right. bore that out really well. But in terms of like the top-end transfers, whereas Colorado got like two really good guys and a bunch of mid, Ole Miss is out there getting like a lot of really good guys. How do you avoid the double count to where like you're weighting both the production and also the rating of the transfer to where, you know, you see what I'm saying?
Yeah. Yeah. That was my biggest, cause I mean, it did once I, first thing I do is what you're absolutely not supposed to do with any sort of mathematical thing. And that's retrofit. Basically look at if I did this, how would it have affected last year? How close can I get? But really I always start off doing that just out of pure curiosity. Because I think it just helps, especially in this little environment where suddenly 2 years ago, the science of roster management changed so dramatically that I don't have any sort of basis for how this is going to work. Well, when you retrofit, like you almost can't give enough weight to those recruiting, the transfer recruiting rankings, the actual rankings, not like you said, not Colorado loading up like on Liberty backups and whatnot, but like the actual high level transfers that got, you know, in like the 247 rankings that got a bunch of points. It was impossible to almost overweight that. So I didn't follow that, you know, and just set it up to where the transfer recruiting rankings are all that matter, but it was a humongous factor. And, you know, so you look at Ole Miss bringing in a really good South Carolina receiver, bringing in what Logan Diggs, bringing in what 1, 2, 3, 4 offensive linemen who started elsewhere, what 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 power conference starters or FBS starters on defense elsewhere. A couple that weren't power conferences, but like, yeah, they get a humongous boost for the fact that they return however many starters they return, plus about what, like 10 starters from other schools in FBS. A lot of those are from power conferences, Walter Nolan and whatnot. So yeah, they got a pretty big bump, but it is funny. Like it took that bump for them to just rise to 8th. Like they were 12th last year. And now they're only 8th. There's still a pretty big barrier between them and the schools that just recruit, you know, top 3 classes every year. And so
no, go ahead.
That was I think that's probably for projections wise. I don't think an Ole Miss type that does pretty well recruiting, but not amazing. But returns, you know, adds a bunch of transfers. I'm not sure they could ever really project above about 6th, but. I mean, I can kind of at least justify because I don't know who else to put 8th right now at the very least.
They're definitely the team that I think if I have to just pick a team to be worried about each year to bust the blue chip ratio, Ole Miss is like the team this year for sure. Now, they got smoked last year when they played Georgia and Alabama.
Yeah.
Like physically, it was not really competitive. Although Bama was close for a while because Bama had no offense for
right, that helped. That's about 3 quarters. Having like no threat to score points certainly helped them keep the game close. No, I do think, you know, adding a couple Washington linemen, Southern Miss, North Carolina, having Walter Nolan, it's the line play. I mean, you can still in a world where Georgia is still probably the safest bet, even if obviously they don't win the playoff, especially now that we have an actual tournament at the end and not just like one extra game. In a world where Georgia is still kind of the model program right now, you can just kind of take a quick cheat and look at quarterback and offensive line to figure out who can actually compete with Georgia when they have to compete with Georgia. And obviously, I mean, Dart's fine, but obviously Ole Miss was still very much lacking in that regard last year. And we'll see if the additions help.
Two teams you were pretty high on, higher than I would think most people had them, considering what they lost, LSU and Florida State. Yeah. Florida State, both quarterbacks. Florida State loses a slew of players. We saw without them at Georgia against the Orange Bowl. Georgia in the Orange Bowl. LSU, no more Jaden Daniels, a couple wide receivers that are incredible. Why so bullish on those two teams, or more bullish than most?
Wait, did Florida State play Georgia in the Orange?
No, you actually just heard Danny not have that
Danny,
memory.
What are we doing,
Danny,
bro?
Danny got it deleted. Oh, we're
well, starting with LSU because they are higher. That's a projection I'm a little worried about just because you could make a case that the unique talent that Jaden Daniels brought to the table last year, they jumped from – well, they were 15th in 22, not as low as I thought, but jumping from 15 to second with Daniels, with Den Brock, with Malik Nabers, that was all the major components that created that number two offense last year are gone. So the fact that they're only projected to fall the third, part because they brought in a Vandy quarterback and a couple receivers, I'm a little worried. Basically, they're 10th because they're third on offense and 34th on defense. But I think they're going to have to improve to probably top 25-ish level on defense to actually be a top 10 team. It's going to be pretty tricky because I have to figure they probably fall further than third. So that's that one I'm kind of shaky about. Florida State I'm less shaky about just because, Mike Norvell kills the transfer portal. He does. He's been one of the most consistently strong transfer guys. I don't think DJ Uiagalelei is as good as Jordan Travis by any means, but he made Jordan Travis a lot better too over the course of a couple seasons. And I think what he's done in loading up, especially at running back, quite a few defensive players. He just does a really nice job of saying we're going to lose a lot of defensive linemen. We need to add a bunch of defensive linemen. It's just real simple math in that way. And he does a pretty good job of winning enough battles, even if the upside is hit and miss. That's going to be the case for everybody. So I think with Uiagalelei, with Roydell Williams coming in at running back, I kind of wish he'd done more at receiver. Although Malik Benson's obviously got potential. But I think what he added, especially on defense, is enough to kind of keep them at a top 15 level. I still expected Clemson to be ahead of them in these projections, honestly. I just kind of assumed Clemson would start off number one in the ACC. And instead, Florida State's 12th and Clemson's 16th. There's like 2 points separating them. I'm kind of fine with that. I can justify FSU as top 15.
Take a question from the tailgate real quick. Hey guys, big fan of the show. How's Bill currently rating Washington with an almost completely different roster? And Bud, another shout out to you here. Love to get Bud's opinion on future recruiting at UW because it seems like an upgrade. Bill first.
They're 29th. they're TCU. I mean, they're TCU. They won however many close games they won last year. It was so much fun. I always get, Washington fans hated me by the end of the year because SP Plus never completely – it had them like third after they beat Oregon the first time and then, barely beat a bunch of extremely mediocre Pac-12 teams and keep falling into the number 10 range or wherever they ended up. Like, I can completely justify it. And Washington fans hated me. I loved Washington. I was hoping they would pull off one more crazy – last minute win in the title game. And I was hoping they would win the national title, but I know why my numbers didn't like them. They were too mediocre too many times down the stretch against teams they should have been, that teams that Oregon beat by a lot more. And that is predictive. Like, we can't just look at the two Oregon games and say they were clearly better than Oregon when 12 other games told us that probably wasn't the case. They won two statistical toss-ups and good for them for doing it. But yeah, they were never really a top five team. They won way too many close games last year. They were, even with the board, they were going to fall back next year because they were going to lose some of those games. And once they lost a healthy chunk of their production as well, they're 29th. They're right behind Iowa, SMU, and NC State. And I can at least sort of justify that.
I mean, they lost so much. By the way, one thing I've tried to do, and like I heard Bill say it, and I totally agree with him in what he said. Like, the way I'm trying to say it now is, like, they didn't sustain play at a top five level.
Right.
Right. Like, obviously we saw what they did on the field. Like, Conley's not out here telling you they're not a good team. Like, they beat Texas in a playoff game. Like, they found a way. And there is, I don't know, maybe there's some unmeasurable value in like find a way type teams, especially if you got like amazing play caller staff that's been together since birth.
Oh, 9 6th year seniors who've played collectively a billion snaps. Yeah, I think
that's also like not scoring off the touchdown at home to Arizona State, almost losing to Stanford. Like, that's the kind of stuff in which like they're not a top five team. Like, they're not sustaining play at a top five level.
Right.
Whereas other teams are showing more dominance, just occasionally the loss column catches them, I guess. But
as far as Washington's recruiting, I don't want to get into a big long thing here because we may want to save this for a different episode. However, I am a little curious about, like, are some guys good fits for certain jobs and not other jobs? We will see. You know, Scott Strickland, his hires at Mississippi State were pretty damn good. And then he thought Dan Mullen would work at Florida, and he didn't because of the recruiting piece. You know, Greg Byrne historically has hired guys who are very much like ball coaches, not recruiters. We haven't seen him make a football hire at Alabama until Kalen DeBoer, who I think is a really damn good coach, and I'm not going to bet against him because his track record is just insanely good, and I think Bama's pretty quickly, you know, waking up in terms of resources and alignment and stuff in like the new era. But yeah, like, man, their recruiting was not great when, you know, when they were like on a run to the national championship game. So you can definitely tell me that Jed Fish could do better than DeBoer did in terms of like high school recruiting. However, what sort of product will he have to sell? Like, there's a chance they could go 6-6 this year. Probably won't, but then it's like how good are your salespeople? How good is the product you're selling? Right. So I think there's some chance, but also you kind of got to survive it if you do have a bit of a rocky year one.
Yeah, I have them 6.7 is the average win total right
now. See, yeah. I mean, they could do a TCU and miss a bowl game pretty easily.
Yeah.
I like to group teams when we've got these ratings because your neighborhood will sometimes tell you a lot about who you are. I've identified two teams that are in a little bit of a no man's land. And if things go well and they maybe jump up into the next neighborhood, they'll be really happy. And if things don't go well, they're not going to like their neighborhood. Bill, the teams I've identified are Nebraska and Kentucky. They're both right around that like 6 rating, right? You know, like somewhere in there. And if things go well, maybe, you know, Kentucky is looking at itself more like Auburn. But if things don't go well, Kentucky's looking at itself like South Carolina. If things do go well for Nebraska, maybe they're playing in the same boat as, you know, what? Like maybe a little bit closer to a Wisconsin. But if things don't go well, you're playing the same game as Rutgers, you know, Minnesota. A lot of fan excitement for the Nebraska Cornhuskers. How do you see those teams, sort of like which way do you see it going for that fork in the road? I love this section of the ratings because the fan response to how things go are going to come down to like your ability to win very close games against similar competition in conference play.
Yeah, it was funny. I did Omaha Radio last week. Shout out to the unsportsmanlike conduct guys. I do their show quite a bit. It was so funny how excited they were to be projected 39th. Nebraska is super excited about maybe having a top 40 program. I mean, I understand why. Because again, I do their show constantly, so I'm kind of taking that pulse quite a bit. But it's the last, 7 years now, they have ranked 65th, 61st, 55th, 62nd, 57th, 69th, and 66th. And they're third in returning production. That's why they're projected to jump. But you're right. Like, that jump could still go in a lot of different directions. They're probably going to start 3-0. UTEP, Colorado, Northern Iowa at home. Colorado's still a mystery for sure, but I give them a pretty good odds of starting 3-0. Then, you know, Illinois at home, they're a projected favorite of at least 9 points in each of their first 5 games. 4 points against Rutgers at home. So maybe that's 6-0. And then Indiana. So hooray, 7-0. Then at Iowa State or at Ohio State, UCLA, at USC, Wisconsin, and at Iowa. If they don't start at least like 5-2, you are going to get end up in kind of a desperate situation down the stretch of like, just give us, we need a 6th win. We need to get this streak over. And we've seen those kind of things where, you know, big home crowd, when it's tense and, really anxious becomes kind of a disadvantage. I think you can just kind of feel the, that happens after bad plays where everybody starts assuming the worst. So, yeah, I mean, they're pretty much guaranteed to start off pretty well. But they're going to have to start off really well if they want to actually have a solid 7-8-9 win season, which is on the table for sure. But it's going to be tricky. That home stretch is rough. And I will say Kentucky, that was the one. I mean, I compare in the SP Plus article, I always compare my rankings to Schlabaugh's way too early's, because it is pretty good. Like, he was one of the first to do that. And he had just updated the list right before SP Plus went up. And he had Kentucky in the top 25. And that was probably the one team where I was I can at least see, even if I disagree, I can kind of see the point. And I wasn't seeing that one. I'm not sure what I'm supposed to see. You have to really, really assume that the offensive changes coordinator and, you know, Brock Vandegrift and Jamori Macklin, potentially very good players by all means. You have to assume that those moves are going to click really, really, really well. Cause they lose probably their two best linemen. They lose Ray Davis. They didn't have much going on at receiver anyway, but lost two of their top four receivers. That defense is going to replace like every linebacker and like two of its top three linemen. It's going to be really hard for that defense to kind of hold form as a top 15 or 20 unit, especially since they regressed last year anyway. That one's tough. I have them 40th, it looks like, and that results in exactly 6.0 wins on average, with a schedule that's not brutal, but hard enough. If you're only a top four team, there are a whole hell of a lot of top 40 programs on your schedule, and it's going to be pretty tough for them, I think.
So, top Big 12 team is a newcomer, Utah. It surprised me. It heartened me, but it also surprised me a little bit that the system is picking up on, you know, maybe returning production, but from 2022.
Yes, that is one thing that I always try to do is when somebody got hurt and missed, and I don't think last year was a representative sample. I was talking about avoiding subjective stuff. Well, this is extremely subjective, but if I think that the 2022 sample is more meaningful, I'll add it. And so at this point in the year, I've only like the marquee injuries have been added back in there. Like, and when I go through and scrub the rosters for the May update, then I'll have done injuries a lot better. But yeah, to be very clear, Cam Rising 2022 is in those numbers. And that's why they start off just inches ahead of like four other Big 12 teams. It did make me happy that Big 12 has number 17, 18, 19, 20, and 22. That's all I want from the Big 12 is every game decided by 3 points. And we're well on our way to that, I think.
Which of these make you uncomfortable? Like when it spits out, you're like, ooh, almost like when your kid says something, you're like, I don't know. Okay. I hope this works.
Are we talking about just the Big 12 or just overall?
Oh, overall, like just, okay. At first blush, this is the first run. We obviously have a spring portal window, which really, because of the two-time transfer now being allowed, could change this stuff a lot. Like, both to the upside and the downside, which of these really kind of, I don't know, we'll see.
Yeah, LSU at 10 did surprise me. I kind of view them as top 15 would have been made a lot more sense to me there. Arizona at 19, they did fall a little bit after losing the production they lost when they lost Jed Fish, but their depth is still pretty questionable. I would feel more comfortable with them in merely the top 30. I think at 19th is a little aggressive. I think Utah, Kansas State, and Oklahoma State are a lot more trustworthy in the Big 12. Just with their current state of things, and among other things, I was just talking about teams that have only been good once. Arizona clearly falls into that category as well. What's funny is Iowa State at 22 doesn't make me uncomfortable. They're second in returning production, and granted, Matt Campbell hasn't won a close game in like 10 years, so they're going to have to figure that out. That's kind of a major thing. But I believe at least enough in regression to the mean in that way that I think that they were much better than they should have been last year. Most of the reasons they were better than expected are back. I think they're a team that could absolutely at least be in the Big 12 race until they lose three straight three-point games and they're out. So that one I'm okay with. Going through the list, I think most of it makes sense to me. Tennessee's kind of in an interesting place. They're 15th. They could easily be fifth. They could easily be 30th. I don't know what to make of them right now. And as we were talking about having Michigan at 5-6 with Alabama, I think I'm glad that those two are clustered together because there is a wide variance on what they might be capable of, good or bad, next year.
Group of five, we know they're guaranteed going to get somebody in the 12-team playoff field. I'm looking at some of your numbers. I think, is it Memphis is the highest G5 team? It's 30-something, then Liberty's a couple spots behind them. your confidence level in one of those teams will be able to be competitive?
Well, Memphis, I mean, Memphis has always looked like a power conference team. They usually take in a decent number of power conference transfers. They always look the part. From a speed standpoint and everything else, especially, they already are kind of a power conference team. It is always funny with these numbers, especially with returning production mattering so much. And obviously, you know, G5 teams losing some of their stars to power conference teams. That's why the trauma of the AAC preview from last year was so much, because I had a 10 favorite players section in each preview, and like seven of those guys transferred within a week, basically after the preview went up. And so that's why I'm not writing these previews for a while. But it's going to affect, like, nobody's G5 is never going to be projected in the top 20 probably, because they're never going to have the returning production or the recruiting rankings or anything like that. I'm trying to give at least like partial credit for FCS stats, because I did think just as a whole it projected the G5 too low last year. So when you call up FCF stars and they do really well, I'm trying to be able to predict that a little better. But no, I mean, I think we're in a situation where there'll always be a team that ends up in like the top 20 in SP Plus from a G5 perspective. It's just it's going to be really hard to predict those teams in advance. I do think Memphis looks the part physically. I know Liberty got overwhelmed last year. Number one, they had no run defense even against Conference USA. And so the fact that they had to play Oregon, a motivated Oregon, that was never going to work out well for them. I did expect a little more from their offense. And their offense did move the ball reasonably okay in that game and didn't have a lot of points to show for it. But I think Memphis is absolutely athletic enough. Boise State's probably athletic enough, but they have enough question marks elsewhere that they're only 50th right now. But Memphis, I really like, I especially since they kept Hennigan. I think they have a lot to offer.
Yeah. Memphis, Liberty, App State, Boise State, all within like what, 3-4 points of each other.
I mean, and Louisiana, that was one that, surprised that makes me a
uncomfortable.
Little bit.
I don't know about that.
Oh yeah. I like Zion Chris a lot, but that was higher than I expected to see them. Yeah. And yeah. I like Miami Ohio's defense a lot too. And they're right there as well.
North Carolina, sub-zero team. Oops.
Yeah. And North Carolina fans were like, oh, that's higher than I expected. That was pretty – there seems to be a little bit of a morale issue right now after not doing more with Drake May. But
I think it's the 5 years of having NFL quarterbacks right. in a row.
And having like one genuine standout season, yeah.
Yeah, and like you needed Notre Dame to also get to the college football playoff and to be an ACC member in order that's to get true. That Orange Bowl tap.
That's true. So yeah, that's right. They were only like 8-4 that year, weren't they?
Yeah, no. It was very North Carolina. They just everything broke their way. Oh, okay. Let's just walk on to the Orange Bowl.
It's funny. Like I wrote basically the same piece back to back at SB Nation when North Carolina hired Mack Brown and when Arizona State hired Herm Edwards. It was the same kind of like, well, let me try to talk myself into this because every fiber of my being hates this move. Because you know they just decided to unretire and jumped ahead of a bunch of deserving guys. Herm Edwards, I feel very comfortable that I was correct about that, even though they won a few games. North Carolina, it's funny, I haven't really been right or wrong about Mack Brown because they've just been average North Carolina the whole time, even though he's recruited pretty well. SP Plus the last 5 years, 37th, 19th. The year they made the NY6 Bowl, then they were 58th, 55th, and 40th the last 3 years. That's kind of almost below average for North Carolina, but not horrible. Maybe this is the horrible year. Maybe this is the re-retirement year because I don't. It's a lot of change, and Max Johnson isn't Drake May, and yeah, I don't. It's hard to really talk yourself into the defense even being. What do I have them? 87th. God. Yeah. It's hard to talk yourself into this team.
Yeah. It's an interesting fall. We'll make for an interesting season. Yes, but.
Because we do have a lot of service members overseas who listen to our show and all those serving. Annual reminder that it is really hard for SP Plus to handle some of these service academies this early in the offseason when we don't really know who's coming back. Like some of these guys have eligibility and then like they don't play for a year and then they actually come back. Because Air Force was the, I believe, largest drop-off you know, from last year to this year. 13 points for a Troy Calhoun team drop-off seems amazing.
Yeah, they were dead last in returning production. And that is one area where Army, Navy, Air Force are never going to grade well in returning production, because they're always going to lose like 16 senior starters, because that's just the way those programs work. They don't have, you know, they don't redshirt. They don't just, you know, it's always going to be that way. So the reason why they're projected to fall that much is simply because they, even by Air Force standards, they lose a ton from last year. And now again, we'll find out when they finally, they're always like the last to release those rosters in the spring, which I understand there are some logistics, like there's a lot going on there, and they have to wait and see who's coming back. So we'll see if maybe some of the seniors I was counting as departing actually weren't, but they also tend to have, when they say you're a senior on the roster, that tends to, unlike everywhere else in the country right now, I can usually count on that meaning you are actually a senior and you're about to leave. So I think it's pretty accurate, and they lose more than normal. I getting Larrier back healthy, because he was only a sophomore, right? Or
I don't know. They're probably lying about that too.
Yeah, according to Kirk Calhoun, he's healthy every game.
Right. Yeah. No, that was they were a very good team last year until he got hurt, and even though he kept playing, they trailed off dramatically. So that didn't help either. Their rating was probably hurt by quarterback injury a decent amount. So yeah, they're 91st overall. I'd feel more comfortable with them being in the 70s, but I don't think this is going to be the absolute best Air Force team we see.
He is Bill Connolly. You can follow all of his work over at ESPN, ESPN.com, the College Game Day podcast, SP Plus ratings available on ESPN.com, as well as the returning production numbers. Anything else that you got top of mind before we get out of here?
I mean, just hang with me. The previews are coming. They're just not coming till May. And it makes me kind of antsy. I'm doing other stuff right now, and it's not what I'm used to. I'm used to diving right in and having Mac opinions right out of the gate. And I have no Mac opinions right now, other than Miami, Ohio.
Oh, SMU's 3-year starter, first team all conference left tackle hit the portal last night, Bill. So update.
Okay, hold on. That drops in. Yeah.
And you can follow him on Twitter at BudElliott3. You can follow him at Danny Cannell. You can follow him at ESPN_BillC. Gentlemen, thank you very much.
See ya.
Hello, everyone. It's Michael Richards here. You might have seen me on CBS working on their Champions League coverage over the last couple of years. I wanted to tell you about an exciting new podcast that I've been working on. It's called The Rest Is Football. It's me, alongside Gary Lineker and Alan Shearer, two absolute legends of the game. The show combines topical debate from the world of soccer along with outrageous tales from our careers. And I mean outrageous. Just search The Rest Is Football wherever you get your podcasts. All the best from Big Meats.